Good morning. Today's daf in the Dharm Samech Beis. We are find ourselves on the Mishnah Samech Alf Amud Beis. Continuation of the Mishnah is here in the eighth parak. Eighth parak, a short parak. Mirtz Hashem tomorrow. We conclude. So over here in the eighth parak, once again, definition of terms that are used in making a neder. We're making a neder, Hochana Chalashim B'nei Adam, and the eighth parak is really going to be a function of Zman. I'm going to be making my neder temporary. It's going to be only lasting for a certain amount of time. A set amount of time, and now it's just a question of what exactly is that set amount of time, and when is that neder going to come to an end and a conclusion. So, in the first Mishnah of the Perek, taking us back to Samech Amud Aleph, so the person says that he's going to be going up until Pesach, Ad HaPesach. So when he says Ad HaPesach, so what he means is up until Pesach, meaning right before Pesach. So that means that once Pesach has come, so the neder now is lifted. On the other hand, if he says Ashiyehei HaPesach, the neder is going to be there and continue through Pesach. So that, of course, means that the neder is going to go not up to, but through Pesach. And then what if he says the words Alifnei? So Machlokus amongst the Tanaim. And what's exactly Pshat in the Machlokus? So that we discussed at the end of yesterday's daf. We are here on Samech Aleph Amud Aleph and Ad HaKatzir. Okay, now we're going to go up to particular harvest seasons. Okay, these Gemaras are going to speak a lot better. The Mishnah and the Gemara is going to speak a lot better to people who are involved in harvesting. Okay, so that obviously, I preclude myself from that list of people who are involved in harvesting. How many harvests have I been involved in so far in my life? The correct numeric answer is zero. So the Gemara is going to be speaking over here about the fig harvest and the grape harvest and the overlap between them and good. So anyone who's been, who has any kind of agricultural experience, if you've been out in the kibbutz, so you know exactly what's going on over here, and that's not me. But, okay, nevertheless, though, give it a good try in terms of just saying good pshat. And today also we have just one of the more unbelievable stories that occurs with the Rebbe Tarfon. That's going to be the centerpiece, so to say, of today's daf. And we'll get to the Mishnah, the Amud Beis. And then tomorrow, Mirz Hashem, we finish the parak. Okay, that's our game plan. So the Mishnah says, Ad HaKatzir, Ad HaBatzir. Okay, so we know that when it comes to harvest, the same word is not going to be used for the various harvests. Meaning, when you see the word katsir, so that's going to be a reference to harvesting of the grain. And when you see the word batsir with a base, so that's going to be regarding grapes. And masik, which is the next word coming up in the Mishnah, so that's regarding olives. Okay, so we have different terms that are used for different fruits. Right now we're going to be calling the grains a fruit. Okay, not a perfect definition, but still, that's not the point. The point of the Mishnah is as follows. Let's start again with the Mishnah. So I say ad katsir, ad batsir, ad hamasik, enu aser ela achiagia. It's achiagia. It's when they actually arrive. Now this is going to be in a little bit of a contradistinction to the first Mishnah. Meaning when I say ad hapesach. So what did we mean with Ad HaPesach? So that was unambiguous. Ad HaPesach means up to but not including the actual Yontif of Pesach. The Mishnah is going to make the chiluk, which I'm about to say. So really what all I'm saying now is just simple pshat in the Mishnah. And that is that when it comes to Pesach, so Pesach is a very known entity. Meaning it's right there on the calendar. So when I say Ad HaPesach, we all know that Pesach is coming up on the 15th day of Nisan. And so when I say Ad HaPesach, I mean until Pesach, meaning up until Pesach, my neder is going to be lifted as we're entering into Pesach, meaning on the 14th day of Nisan, so that's it. That's the deadline of my neder. But when I'm talking now about a harvest, so here comes the trickier part. The harvest is not a date on the calendar, it's a season. In other words, right, we're going to be harvesting sometime around whatever the harvests are. So when you say Ad and you're not turning to a calendaric date, but you're rather talking to about an event, so it's not going to be as clear-cut as it was in the previous Mishnah. And that's exactly the point of our Mishnah. So if I say any of them, Eino Asur, Ela Ad Shiagiyam. So the Isser is only going to be when it arrives. Zeklal. Kol Zmanu Kavua. And the Mishnah now makes exactly this point. So when we're talking about Zmanu Kavua, so the Amr Ad Shiagiya, Asur Ad Shiagiya. So when it's a calendaric date and I say ad shiagia, meaning it is until it actually arrives. And the Isser starts now and it goes until when it arrives. Amr Achiehe, Aser Achiehetse. And when it say Achiehe, again, this goes back to our first Mishnah, what we learned in yesterday's daf. And when I say Achiehe, what I mean is, yesterday, 2 days ago, but regardless. And when I say Achiehe, it means up to and including Pesach, right? Assuming you say Achiehe Pesach. The Aser Achiehetse. V'choshein z'mano kavua, bein Amr Achiehe, bein Amr Achiehagia, eino Aser Ela Ad Shiagia. But when I say something that is not calendaric, meaning it's not on the calendar. Now, we know which season it's going to be, but in other words, but we don't know exactly when it's going to be. So the Isser doesn't actually begin until the season actually begins. So when I say Ad HaKatsir, Ad HaMasik. So what I mean to say is that I don't want my neder to actually kick in until the harvest season actually begins. Okay, good. So a basic difference in terms of what the word Ad means when I'm talking about something which is clear on the calendar versus something which is not as clear on the calendar and extends for a certain period of time. Ad HaKayitz. Now, we say Ad HaKayitz. The modern Hebrew Kayitz is a reference to the summer, but that's not what the Mishnah here is referring to. Kayitz in the Mishnah is referring to the harvesting of figs. So, Ad Shiyehe HaKayitz. So, Ad Shiyehezchilu Am Lachnis Bekalkalos. So, that means to say that when is the Neder going to begin? So the beginning of the Neder is going to be taking place when people are out there with their baskets. So that is going to be the conclusion of the harvesting of the fig. Ashiyavorakites. Now let's say his Neder is Ashiyavorakites, meaning we're not looking now at the beginning of the harvest, but we're looking at the end of the harvest, meaning when the harvest comes to a conclusion. So Ashiyakpila Mikzaot, so when they start folding up the Mikzaot. So it's at that point in time now that the fig harvest has come to an end. Good. So what we're learning now together in the Mishnah is basically when is the beginning of the fig season, when is the end of the harvesting of the fig season, and the folding up of the mixaot. What are mixaot? They're not perfectly clear. So the pshat we're going to offer in the Mishnah is basically the knives. Okay, it's not the only pshat. In other words, there are other pshatim in the Mishnah, but when the knives are folded, so it's at that point in time now it has come to an end. Okay, good. That's the run. Anyway. So good. The basic idea in the Mishnah is a distinction to be made between when I say Ad and I'm pointing to something on the calendar versus Ad when I'm pointing to a particular season, notably a harvest season. Good. Tana Kalkala Shamru, Kalkala Shaltainim Velo, Kalkana Shal Avanim. Okay, a bit of a cryptic statement that we're opening up with in terms of a Braisa. And when we say that I say Ad HaKayitz, and I'm talking about the harvesting of the fig season, so it's when people are taking out their baskets. Which baskets? The Braises say, you know, the baskets for the figs, not the basket for the grapes. Okay. I really feel, okay, it's my lack of knowledge over here in terms of the harvesting, in which I don't really appreciate the Braises. Meaning the Braises is telling us that when I'm making a ned or connecting it to the fig season, make sure you know which baskets we're talking about. Right? The fig baskets, not the grape baskets. Well, why would I have thought there's overlap between them? So I'm telling you that if I understood harvest and I understood the fig harvest versus the grape harvest, I'm sure I would have a much better pshat to say within the Braisa. Anyway, but the Braisa says, you know, the baskets for the figs, not the baskets for the grapes. Okay. Tanya, I know there may be peres akayitz in Aser Ela B'Teinim. I'm talking about peres akayitz. Now, peres akayitz, it's interesting because now kayitz probably is used in the context of summer because probably that's when the fig harvest was done. I'm saying peros hakayitz, so over there it's a reference to te'enim, to figs. Reb Shimon Gamliel Omer anavim bichlal te'enim. Shimon Gamliel says that grapes are also included in this as well, meaning Reb Shimon Gamliel is of the position that anavim grapes also are considered peros hakayitz. Again, if I knew the harvest better, I'd understand the dynamics of this machlokus between the Tanakhama and Shimon Gamliel. So my time at the Tanakhama Kasavatana Miksasam Biyada, as the Gemara over here offers a pshat. And that is that as far as Tainim are concerned, so how do they harvest it? They're harvested with their hand. And the Anavim lo Miksam Biyadam, but as far as grapes are concerned, grapes are not harvested with your hands, but rather use an instrument. You use a knife. So the and Kayitz. The word kayitz, generally speaking, is used to describe something where the harvesting is done with your hand, not with an instrument, not with a knife. And Reb Shimon Gamliel savar anavim nami ki mir didan, so miksasem yadam. And as far as the grapes are concerned, so when they're going to be dried up, so some of the harvesting is also done with your hands as well. Okay, good. So machlokis between the Tanaim, when I'm talking about the peros hakayitz, am I just talking about figs, or also am I talking about grapes as well? Machlokis Tanaim, and really it's a function of how to understand the harvesting that is this, that's connected and associated with the word kayitz. So over here, we're looking at the end of the harvest season. At the end of the harvest season is when they fold their knives. Folding the knives, putting it back into their sacks. So it's at that point in time that the harvest season is over. All figs that are harvested are done at that point in time. Once you see the folding of the knives. So Tana, achich b'lu rova mixos. So the Gemara over here gives us a braisa. And the braisa gives us a little bit more definition, a little bit more accuracy in terms of when exactly is the end of the harvest. And that is most of the knives are going to be folded. Okay, good. Now, this is going to become a critically important halacha regarding what? So as we're about to see, Tana, huk b'lu rova mixos, mutars mishum gezel, paturus minamaisro. So as then we're now on the top of Samach Bezim and Aleph. So here we go. So now we're going to be starting off the following discussion. A lot of interesting talk today in today's daf. And that is, once you see most of the knives folded, now what? Now what is that the harvest is over. Good. And now what? And therefore, there are figs left out in the field. They're hefker. The assumption now is that those figs now are no longer going to, concerned with from the owner, meaning that basically yeish has occurred, right? It's exactly the lashon of the Ran. First Ran on the Amud. Shemisyashim hein mimash shenisha basada. Achish a couple of vechnis urava mitzos. So you see the farmers now, and most of the knives are now folded and put away. And so now whatever's left over, yeush. Okay. Now yeush and hefker over here probably are going to be synonymous terms that are used to describe whatever fruit is left out in the field. Meaning, so now you, anybody who's not the owner of the field has perfect permission to go in there and take whatever's remaining out there in the field. Okay. Okay, good. It happens to be. You read my mind. Okay, you did a fantastic job. In other words, there is an issue that the property is not yours. And unlike Shvius and Shemitah, where you do have Torah permission to go onto people's properties, over here, just because the harvest is over, now people can just simply walk onto your property. Okay, that part also bothered me as well. I don't have a great approach, but anyway. But as far as the fruit is concerned, the fruit are hefker, which means one of two things, and both are connected to one another. Number one, it means that anyone who wants to can go and take that fruit. Number two, a patur from trumas amaisos, because anything that is not owned by anybody is going to be exempt from trumas amaisos. Good. So that's the halacha, right? In fact, if you take a look at the next run over here, paturus min amaiser, dichsiv avar levi kein lo chelak v'nachla imach. In fact, the Ran says that these two points are interconnected. Meaning, why is a Levi entitled to go out into the field? Because he doesn't have a portion together with you. Which means to say that it belongs to you, not to him. And since it belongs to you, not to him, so therefore, there's a Chiv of Meiser, and by extension, Trumas and Meisers as well. However, once it's owned by nobody and everybody has equal access and equal opportunity to take whatever it is, i.e. it's hefker, so then there's no longer a chiyuv of trumas amaisos. Good. So these two points are connected. So once it's hefker, so there's no longer a chiyuv of trumas amaisos. So I'm watching the fig harvest occur. The knives are being folded. They're being put away. Most of them put away. So now we can say two things. Number one, hefker. Number two, it's a patur from trumas amaisos. Good. So now, story time. Okay, so for a good part of the Amud Aleph of today's daf, so we're going to be treated to a number of stories of, so now I have a legitimate heter for people to go out into the field and take from the fruit, so can people help themselves to such a heter? Let's go. Number one, Rebbe Yosef, Rebbe Yehuda, Iklula, Wasra. So we have the two Tanayim going out into a city. Bizmash, Ikbalu, Rav, Amiksos. So most of the knives are folded up. And Rebbe Havaka, Achel, Rebbe Yosef, Rebbe Yehuda, Lo Achel. And so over here, a difference of position regarding whether or not you can help yourselves to those fruit left out in the field. Rebbe did, and Rebbe Yosef, Rebbe Yehuda did not. Asumaron, the owner of the field came, Amar lo amai lo achlu rabbanan. And he says, nu, why don't you eat? Now, I'm sorry, hukvalu rava mixosu. So most of the knives are folded up. Okay. Now, over here, whenever you see any kind of communication in the Gemara, so what becomes so critical and so important, which you need a Rebbe for, and that, of course, is a tone. Okay? In other words, the statement was made. What is this? What is it, a statement of fact? What is it? Was it a statement of sarcasm? In other words, what was the tone that was communicated and conveyed when the owner said, you know, the knives are folded, please help yourself? So it really is important in terms of the inflection, in terms of how the sentence was made. And so what you don't know is how to read it, how to properly read it. And that's exactly what's happening over here. So Rav Yosef, Rav Yehuda, even though was given a formal invitation from the owner, knew, please help yourself. Meaning, and by the way, in other words, the halacha, you don't need a formal invitation from the owner. Meaning we have a halacha. The halacha is that whatever's left out of the field at the end of the harvest is hefker, and you can take it. On top of that, you also have an invitation, a personal invitation from the owner of the field. So the Rebbe seems to be perfectly in the right. And what's holding back Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda? So the Gemara says, Mishum Sanyus Milsa Udekamer Haden Gavra. Sanyus Milsa. It could very well be that the owner of the field was unbelievably sarcastic. All right, Sanyus Milsa. Look at the Ran over here. Mishum Sanyus Milsa. Mibnei Roa Lev Lamar Kvar Hitartam Osam Latz Mechem. Meaning that this was not meant as a invitation, was rather meant as sarcastic. Meaning, oh, lovely. Right, rabbis over here are just giving permission for themselves, right? Allowing themselves, helping themselves to go onto the field. Love it. Okay, so in other words, right, now you hear my inflection, now you hear my tone. So, right, that's sarcasm. But that's what Rabbi Yossi was reading. And so it's funny. In other words, what the Tanaim seemed to be arguing about over here is basically what was his tone? Meaning, was he being sincere? Was he being sarcastic? Meaning, he was difficult to read? Was that the machlokas? Hard to know. Alternatively, it could just very well be that Rebbe was not interested in his tone, meaning Rebbe was just simply relying on the halacha. The halacha is that it's a hefker at the end of the at the end of the harvest, and that's it. And whether the owner was gentle, bitter, right, sincere, insincere, doesn't matter. Could be that that's a machlokas. Anyway, but Rav Yosef, Rav Yehuda felt that the owner of the field had ill will towards Talmidei Chachamim, felt that Talmidei Chachamim were using and abusing the halacha to their benefit, and so therefore Rav Yosef, Rav Yehuda elected not to take from the field. Next story, Rabbi Chama, Rabbi Chani Nikla Lo Asra, Bizman Shuk Bulu Rav Amiksaos Havakachil, Velo Yav Lashamei. I'm sorry, Havakachil. So once again, next story with Rabbi Chama. Barebi, and most of the knives were folded, which means that the harvest was over, and so whatever was left on the field was motor, and Yohiv Lishame, and he gave to his shamish, and the velo achel and the shamish need amr le echol. So Rabbi Chama gave instructions to his shamish. You're allowed to eat. Kach amr le Rabbi Shmuel, but Rabbi Yossi mishum aviv. So hukpul aravim mixos mutars mishum gezel peturos min amaiser. Okay. Over here, what's the point of this story? Meaning it's basically repeating what we know already. So first of all, right, I always find that when the Gemara has an opportunity to quote Rabbi Yossi, right, Rabbi Shmuel, but Rabbi Yossi said in the name of his father, meaning, right, a number of times throughout Shas, you'll see that quoting Rabbi Yossi usually is a conversation ender, right? Rabbi Yossi said it, right, and the amount of respect and authority that Rabbi Yossi had in terms of being a posek, and so over here, maybe the whole point of bringing in this story, even though it's repeating what we know already, is that it's said over B'Shem Rabbi Yossi. And that usually ends up being a conversation ender. Right? Look at how what Rabbi Chama said. Meaning, basically, I have a psak from Rabbi Yossi that it's okay. Now, we don't know the ending of the story, but I assume the ending of the story is, and the Shamash went and ate it. Okay. Rabbi Tarfon Ashkecheu Gavra Bizman Shuk Bulu Amiksaos Tekachil. So as far as Rabbi Tarfon was concerned, Rabbi Tarfon himself was helping himself to eating the figs at the end of the season, after the season's over. It was Bizman Shuk Bulu Amiksaos Tekachil. He was eating it after all the knives were folded over. And now the owner of the field finds this man on his field that was eating from the figs. And what's going on over here? The owner of the field was upset, to say the very least. Now, when I say to say the very least, watch what happens next. So achde besake. So what he does is that basically he takes Rabbi Tarfon, not knowing it's Rabbi Tarfon, Maybe it was night, maybe it was dark, whatever the case was, not knowing it was Rabbi Tarfon, and he puts him into a sack, kidnaps Rabbi Tarfon. And not only that, Shaklev Amche Lemishne Benara. And what he's going to do now is that he's going to take this person, throw him into a sack, and he's going to throw him down the river. Okay. So now Rabbi Tarfon finds himself in some predicament. So he is tied in the sack, and he's about to be thrown into the river. Okay. Impossible to imagine that there's any real justification for this kind of action by the course of the owner. Okay? In other words, I totally understand he's upset, but in other words, but what you don't get to do is you don't get to take the person's trespassing and sack him and throw and throw him down a river. That part's a bit excessive, okay, if I may say. Okay. So, again, we know very little in terms of the context, in terms of what else was happening. Not that I'm trying to justify it, but in other words, but I'm sure there's more information that's involved. So anyway, so the, Amr lo, oi lo latarfen shezeh hargo, sheshama ugavra shafkua va'arak. Okay. So now, as Rabbi Tarfon is in the bag, and now what does he do? He bemoans the situation. Well, woe to Rabbi Tarfon, right? Shezeh hargo. In other words, that he right now is about to be killed. Okay, so now the owner of the field, who has this guy in the back, who, you know, right there, I'm going to get a little anachronistic over here, who basically is driving with this guy in the trunk of his car, and he now overhears that the person's identifying himself, woe to Rabbi Tarfon, meaning now the owner of the field realizes that who has he got in the sack? So he's got Rabbi Tarfon in the sack. So what does he do? Shafkiv Arek. So basically he drops the sack, he runs away. In other words, terrible embarrassment on the part of the owner of the field, that who is he ready to kill? Who is he about to kill? He was about to kill Rabbi Tarfon. Okay. So this, of course, is an unbelievable story. It's a wild story regarding Rabbi Tarfon and the fact that Rabbi Tarfon was almost killed. Just out of curiosity, by the way, Rabbi Tarfon, not the first time that we saw in Shas that his life was on the line. Right? In Brachos, we all know. So the Gemara in Brachos had Rabbi Tarfon doing what? So, in other words, it's a machlokus between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. What's the proper position in terms of saying Shema? So, Beis Hillel's of the position that you say whatever position you want, doesn't matter. And Beis Shammai says no, Shema has to be said in a particular position, right? In the evening, b'shach b'cha, you have to be shochev, you have to be lying down. In the morning, uv kumecha, you got to be standing. Now we don't pasken like Beis Shammai, we pasken like Beis Hillel. But what did Rabbi Tarfon do? Rabbi Tarfon ended up becoming machmir, like Beis Shammai. So he was traveling one night, and he was about to say Shema, and so because he wanted to be machmir like Beis Shammai, so what did he do? He lied down on the road, and he was almost run over. Okay, now, the Gemara doesn't tell us exactly what happened, but in other words, the Gemara says that he almost lost his life. Okay, just interesting curiosity in terms of this is not the first time that Rabbi Tarfon almost died. So over here, so the Gemara now has a number of comments regarding this story. Am Rabbi Abba Misham Rabbi Chanan Yemen Gamel Kol Yom Avshos Lo Tzadik Ayim Estarol Davar Zeh Am Ra Olo Shin Nishtamshi Bekitzor Shal Torah. So the story bothered Rabbi Tarfon for the duration of his life. Why? Because what he was doing is that he was making use and he was exploiting the Kesser Shal Torah. In other words, obviously Rabbi Tarfon was exemplified. He personified Torah. Right, he had the Kesser Shel Torah, the crown of Torah, and so what you have to do is you have to be very careful. In other words, having the Kesser Shel Torah affords you a certain amount of kavod, but what you can't do is you can't use it for your benefit. You can't manipulate. You can't exploit it. So over here, he felt that this was an exploitation of the Kesser of Torah, and it bothered him. The Amar Rav Abba Baruch Hanan Rav Yochanan Kol Mishamesh BeKesser Shel Torah Nekam Min HaOlam. So the anyone who makes exploitation regarding the Kesser Shel Torah, so he's going to be plucked right out of the world. In other words, he's going to be experiencing a death that is an unusual death, right? Nekar min ha'olam. Sorry. Okay, let's just leave it at that. So he's going to have an unusual death. So Kavachomer Umabashatsin Shin Shamish Bikli Kodesh Nasu Klichol Shinemru Uvauba Pritzim Vikhilalua Kevinshipartsum Nasekol Nekam and Olam Dixi Beba Laila Katilba Shatzar Hamishamish Bikitsar Shotorashu Chavikayam La Olam Alakas Kama Vikama. And the Gemara says, and how do I know this? I know this from Belshazzar. Okay, so quick history lesson, crash course. Let's do it. So Bavel had a rule that lasted for 70 years. At least that's what the Navi said. Navi said that the Babylonians are going to be ruling for a total of 70 years. What really everyone struggled with is how to count those 70 years. The Gemara in Megillah Daf Yud goes through the attempted counting of the 70 years. When does 70 years start? When does it end? Okay, good. So one of the variations of how to count it basically had Belshazzar in year number 3 of his rule. Now, Belshazzar is the third of the Babylonian emperors. In other words, first was Nebuchadnezzar. That one everyone knows. Second one is Evil-Merodach. That one very few people know. And the third one is Belshazzar. So Belshazzar was the third of the Babylonian emperors. And by year 3 of his rule, so he felt, we're good. In other words, the Navi said that 70 years, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to take the Jewish people, bring them back into Eretz Yisrael to build the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, that was the Nevuah. And Belshazzar had the counting, and without going through the details of when he started the count, so the counting came to a conclusion, 70 years came to a conclusion in year number 2 of his reign. And then, in year number 3, he felt like, that's it. In other words, for whatever reason, the Nevuah came and it went. And the Jews were not redeemed. And now, good. And so he felt comfortable. So what did he do? So from his Zeta, what he got was the Kalim of the Beis HaMikdash. Meaning when Nebuchadnezzar conquered the Beis HaMikdash, so he took the Kalim out of the Beis HaMikdash and he kept it in the palace. But Nebuchadnezzar wouldn't touch the Kalim. What Belshazzar did in year number 3 of his rule is he took the Kalim and he brought them out to a party. Okay, good. Now, a description of the party. The party is described in detail in Sefer Daniel. Okay, fifth parak, I think. Okay. So he brought the Kalim out to the party. So this is a party in which he's celebrating what he believes to be the demise of the Jewish people and the fact that the Jewish people are not going to be redeemed. And so what happens at this party? So a disembodied hand comes and writes a message on the wall. Okay. The expression, the term, the writing on the wall. The origins are coming from this episode, from this incident. And it was a cryptic message and it needed decoding. And so what Belshazzar did is he called out Daniel. And Daniel read the message and he decoded the message. And basically, the message read, this is the end of the Persian Empire. I'm paraphrasing. This is, I'm giving a short version of the story. And so it's at that party. So what happened? So the joint venture of Parasumadai, Persian Mede. So they came out. They came out at the party, killed everyone at the party. Parenthetically, by the way, there was one survivor at the party, and that survivor was either a daughter or a granddaughter to Belshazzar, and that was Vashti. Okay, good. So anyway, now that we got the backdrop. So now the whole point over here is that at the party itself, so what was he doing? He was being mishamish in the kalim of the Beis HaMikdash, right? And by the way, just I don't want the coincidence to let us go. What happened is that I'm reading, Ubauba pritzim v'chiluluha, right? He was mechalalit, right? Similar to Hanukkah. Okay, good. Just a fantastic coincidence over here as we are on the 8th day of Hanukkah. Okay, good. So what he did is that he desecrated, he violated the kalim, and so what he experiences is a misa mishuna. So now the Gemara says, so now you know that. So now over here we're going to make a simple kavachomer. If that's true regarding the kalim of the Beis HaMikdash, so if you take keser shel Torah, now keser shel Torah, which is chai v'kayim la'olad, it's more permanent than the kalim of the Beis HaMikdash. Kalim of the Beis HaMikdash are physical items. And eventually they're going to need to be replaced. But if you take Keser Shel Torah and you misuse and you exploit Keser Shel Torah, Alach es kama v'kama. Okay, so for sure you're going to be experiencing a Misa Mishuna. Good. Rabbi Tarfon, give the Chiyachal, Huchbalu Rova Mitzvah Zava, Amay Tzari El Gavra. So the Gemara says, okay, so now we know that it bothered him for the rest of his life that he was Mishtamish B'Keser Torah. Good. The Gemara now wants to know, as far as Rabbi Tarfon is concerned, look, the knives were folded, meaning it's a halacha. We've been spending the whole day today talking about this halacha. So the knives were folded, and so what's the concern? What's the worry? So, Amai Tzari Gavra. So, Mishum Dahu Havaganvele Inve Kule Shasa. So the Gemara now gives us, The Gemara now gives us a little more to the story. And that was, is that people would come to his field, steal the whole year. So now he found Rabbi Tafran on the field. So in other words, good. So the I foreshadowed this a little bit earlier. So what happened was is that people were stealing from his field the year round. And now finally, he thinks he caught the thief. Meaning it was Rabbi Tafran, of course, wasn't the thief. Rabbi Tafran just happens to have been there, Bishas Heter. But year round, people were stealing from him. And so the owner of the field now catches Rabbi Tafran. And so he feels like, okay, so Yahachia might see her nafshay. So the Gemara says, okay, but still, I don't understand. So why is Rabbi Tafran so bothered? Meaning he was coming Bishas Heter. Okay, so he was confused with the Ganav. And the frustration of the owner because somebody was stealing the year round. But still, as far as Rabbi Tarfon is concerned, Rabbi Tarfon wasn't in the wrong. So the Gemara says, Mishum de Rabbi Tarfon, Asher Gadol Hava, V'Avela Lefaisa B'damim. So the Gemara says, look, as far as Rabbi Tarfon is concerned, he was an extraordinarily wealthy man. What Rabbi Tarfon should have done while he was in the sack is that he should have pleaded with the owner of the field and said, look, in other words, what's the problem? The problem is you felt like I stole, I'll pay for it. What happened? The other people stole from that as well. I'll pay for that as well. Meaning Rabbi Tafran was a very wealthy man. And for him, rather than using Keser Torah, to basically, serve as his ticket to freedom. So why don't you just simply pay? Why don't you offer to pay? That's what bothered Rabbi Tafran. Tanya with the Gemara quotes a Braisa. So Lava, so Shem Lachech Lishma B'Kolol Adafka Bo. So Shalom Yomar Adam Ekra Shikruni Chacham. Meaning, what's the purpose of learning? The purpose of learning is to create Dveikus B'Hashem. And there should be no other purpose to learning. Meaning, a person should learn and say, I'm going to learn Chumash, and Shikruni Chacham, so people call me Chacham. Eshna, I should learn Mishnayos, Shikruni Rebbe, so that people call me Rebbe. Eshanin, Shiei Zakin Veshe B'Yeshiva. And teaching to others, so that I'll be appointed a Rosh Yeshiva. So, Ela, Laman Me'ava, V'Sofa Kavalavo. What I'll do is I'll learn Me'ava, the covenant will come notwithstanding. Shenemer Kashem Alatz Basecha Kasveim Aluach Libecha. The Gemara quotes the pasuk in Mishlei, and basically what you're supposed to do is Kasim Aluach Libecha, write it on your heart. So the V'Omer Derched Derchei Noam V'Omer Itzchaim Hilamachzikim V'Samchem Ushar, meaning that the purpose of learning is just simply for learning's sake, Torah Lishma, and not for any ulterior motive. And again, it's connection to what we learned previously, and not like Rabbi Tarfon, who use the Keser Shatara in order to receive kavod. In other words, by the way, the kavod for Rabbi Tafron is that his life be saved, but still, Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Tzadok Omer, I'll say Dvarim L'Shem Pa'alam. When you do things, do it for L'Shem Shamayim. V'daber Behem L'Shemam. And when you talk in Torah, again, L'Shem Shamayim. Alta say Matar L'Shem Behem, but don't put it on a crown on your head. And so that you glorify yourself. Alta Sim Kardam Lios Oderbo. And don't make it like, some sort of tool. In which you're going to be harvesting. All right, it's a mashal. In other words, don't use it for your own benefit. The Gemara reviews for us the kavachomer that we saw earlier. Belshazzar went ahead, used and exploited the clay, the kalim of the Beis Hamikdash, and he experienced misa mishuna. So anyone who used and exploits keser shel Torah. Alachas kama v'kama. Amar Rav Asher Leilinish lo yidui nafshei ba'asra de lo yadilei. So what you're allowed to do, says Rava, is that you're allowed to identify yourself. In other words, if you go to a town and they don't know who you are, so you can identify yourself. Meaning, if you happen to be Talmid Chacham, you can tell people. Such dichsiv v'avdecha yireis Hashem minu Rav. Okay, and we have precedent for that in the Navi. So a meeting between Avadja and Eliyahu and Avi. Eliyahu did not know who Avadja was, and he says, "Avdecha yireis Hashem minu Rav." In other words, he says, "I've been a yirei Hashem my whole life." Okay, good. So Ela kashya de Rabbi Tarfon. So the Gemara says, "Okay, so if you're allowed to identify yourself," says Rava. So I go back to the story of Rabbi Tarfon. I told you, Rabbi Tarfon is the centerpiece of today's daf. I go back to Rabbi Tarfon, and we're going to ask a simple question. What did Rabbi Tarfon do? All he did was identify himself. He was in the sack. He was about to be thrown down the river. And he said, "Nu, I'm Rabbi Tarfon." Okay, good. So the Gemara says again, same answer. So again, because what Rabbi Tarfon did is that, look, it's true you're allowed to identify yourself, but in other words, another way for him to extricate himself from that situation would have been just simply to pay his way out. He had money. He had a lot of money. So in other words, he could have paid his way out. And since there's an alternative rather than using Kesar Shel Torah, he should have gone with that alternative. Rav Arami, Ksiv Avdecha Yireis Hashemino Rav, Uksiv Yalu Chazar V'lo Ficha. So what we have over here seemingly is a stira. On one hand, so we have the episode with Avadja and Eliyahu, where Avadja identified himself as being a Yerushamayim, and meanwhile, the Pasuk of Mishlei says, Yalu Chazar V'lo Ficha. Let other people praise you, but you shouldn't praise yourself. So the Gemara says, Haba Asr Diyadile, Haba Asr Dolo Yadile. So the Gemara gives a simple chiluk. Basically, we heard it already. I know a lot of review in today's daf, but we heard it already. We get to hear it again, and that is that if you're living in a town, people know who you are. So then, don't introduce yourself. Hi, I'm a Yerushamayim. In other words, let other people say that you're a Yerushamayim, but that's not how you need to introduce yourself. But no, you're going into a town, people don't know you, so you can introduce yourself as knowing a little bit of Torah. I'm a Rav Asher Le Tzur Ben Rabban La Meimar Tzur Ben Rabban Anan Asher Le Tigra Bereisha. So another thing that a Talmid Chacham is allowed to do, and that is that jump to the front of the line. Okay, now, right, I say this, and I'm a little bit hesitant over here, because the Gemara says it like, b'fe male, meaning the Gemara has no reservation, therefore I shouldn't have a reservation, but still, the Gemara says is that basically, let's say there's a line for Beis Din, right? Beis Din now is going to be seeing cases. And where do you find yourself right now? You're not first on line, right? And you're waiting behind other people, and you're a Talmid Chacham, so you could jump to the front of the line. You could say, I'm a Talmid Chacham, and jump to the front of the line. So and the Gemara says, and look, as far as the Bnei David are concerned, so they're described as Kohanim. Now, of course, they're not Kohanim, because David is not a Kohen. David's from Shevet Yehuda. But in other words, just like a Kohen is allowed to get first, so too, the Bnei David, who are Talmid Chachamim, so they too also can get first as well. So Af Talmid Chacham Nota Barosh. So Menalan Dichsiv Vikidashem, and oh, by the way, how do I know that a Kohen gets first? So that's a drasha that we have numerous times. The Gemara quotes it. Vikidashem Ki Eslechem Alokecha Umakriv V'Tan Debei Rabbi Shmuel Vikidashto L'Chol Davar Shebekdusha. So anytime that we have a Davar Shebekdusha over here in this context means anytime there's a covered opportunity. So make sure that you give the Kohen first. Turn to the Amud Beis. Liftoch Rishon. So far as Kriyas Torah is concerned, make sure the Kohen gets the first Aliyah. We're so used to it, by the way. Like, we don't, like, okay, good. That's a Kiyum of the Kiddushto. And Ulevarach Rishon. And when it comes to Birchas Hamazon, so make sure that if there's a Kohen there, he should be benching. And Lito Mani Yafa Rishon. So anytime there's any kind of distribution, and so make sure the Kohen gets first. Okay, Vikidashto, so the Kohen should jump to the front of the line. And we're describing the Bnei David as Kohanim. Again, Kohanim over there is a loose terminology, basically describing that just like the Kohanim get first, the Bnei David get first. Why do the Bnei David get first? Not because they're Kohanim, but because they're Talmid Chachamim. Good. So Talmid Chacham now is in line, so you should move him to the front of the line. Amar Rav Asher Le Litzur Mirabana Lamemar Lo Yavina Karga. Rava says another heter when it comes to the Kohanim, and that's parsonage. Okay. I know I'm speaking in modern tax code, but in other words, parsonage. You can identify yourself as a Talmud Chacham and say that I'm not paying the taxes. Okay, so exactly the rules of the government and which, what taxes are collecting, what they're not collecting, but in other words, if you need to identify yourself as a Talmud Chacham so that you don't have to pay the taxes, you're allowed to do that. So there are three different types of taxes being described over here. There's minda, below, and halach. Those are three different types of taxes. So lo shalit lamirma ilahon. And you could say, I'm not paying these taxes. V'amar v'yehuda. So minda zu menasa melech. So minda is menasa melech. The Ran describes that as being some sort of property tax. And below is a kesef gagulasa. So below, basically a head tax. And halach zu anuna. And halach is a reference to arnuna. Right, modern Hebrew, Arnuna is also kind of a state tax. Okay, here in the Gemara, a different type of tax. Right, the Ran describes it as some sort of partnership tax. Okay, whatever you can call it income tax. I don't think that's right, but anyway, the point is that There's a series of different taxes you're going to pay, right? Nothing's changed in the last couple thousand years. There's a series of different taxes you're going to pay, but if being a Talmid Chacham exempts you from paying those taxes, you can identify yourself as a Talmid Chacham. And finally, just to finish up today's daf, Amar Rav Ashar Leila Tzorba Rabban Lamemar, Avda Denura Anan Lo Yavina Nakarga. So you can say the following, and that is Ana Avda Denura Anan. So there used to be a type of idolatry that worshiped fire. Okay, I'll say Zoroastrianism only because it makes me sound smart. The truth of the matter is I don't know. So I run the risk of not sounding smart. Whatever the case is, there's a type of idolatry that dealt with fire. And so what Rava says is that you could say, Talmid Chacham could say, Avda Denura Ana. In other words, I'm one of those worshippers. I'm associated with those worshippers, and therefore enough to pay tax. My time al avruchar yamine kamar, because that's being mavriachari. In other words, over there, that doesn't qualify as hana. Okay, this comes to a discussion that we had earlier in the Masechta, and that is that if the hana is a passive hana, just simply getting the line off of your back, so that's not a hana. To get direct hana from Avodah Zarah, that's out of the question. Over here, this is not a direct hana, this is an indirect hana. All you're going to do is just get the ari, the line, the quote-unquote line, to get you off your back, that doesn't qualify as hana, and therefore you could do it. Even though, by the way, in other words, it's funny, before the Gemara, I would have thought any kind of benefit whatsoever from Avodah Zarah is definitely out of the question. Good, that's what I would have thought. But what the Gemara is being mechadish is that's true, but that's if it's a direct hana. The indirect hana being Mavriya Chari, so that would be okay. Ravashi had an Abba. Now, Abba usually means father over here in this context. It means a forest. In Aramaic, the word Abba means forest. So over here, it's a description of a forest. So Rav Ashi had a forest, the Zavni Lebeinura. And what he would do is a big customer of his would be these fire worshippers. And so basically what he was doing is that he was selling the wood to the fire worshippers. The obvious question, which the Gemara is about to ask is, that's Lifnei Iver, isn't it? In other words, if you know that your customers are going to be taking your product and using it for idolatry, and so what you're doing is aiding and abetting, that's Lifnei Iver. So how could you do that? So Amalei Ravin LeRav Ashi, Haika Lifnei Iver, Lo Sitei Michshol. So the Gemara asks the question. Gemara gives the answer, Amalei Rav Eitzim La'asaka Nitnu. In other words, some of the wood is going to be used for Avodah Zarah, but in other words, a good percentage. The Gemara says, Rav Eitzim. Most of the wood is going to be used for fuel, right? Heat, cooking, right? In other words, can you imagine that we needed heat last night? Okay, so, right, so in other words, it's not bittul by Avodah Zarah, but to just sharpen your point a little bit more, there's bittul by Lifnei Iver. In other words, since most of the wood that's sold is going to be used for purposes that are permitted, so therefore the small amount that will be purchased and will be used for Avodah Zarah, so in other words, you can rely on the roof. Okay. Over here, this last point of the Gemara has got a lot of practical application, meaning that you're selling something, the purchaser may be using it for purposes of Avodah Zarah, but since the majority of it is not, so therefore you're totally within your right. Exactly what the parameters are in terms of the allowance, obviously that extends well beyond the daf, but today's daf, certainly the end of today's daf, certainly speaks to this idea. Okay, I kind of takes us to the end of today's daf. Let's quickly recap. Okay, in our Mishnah, what our Mishnah did is contrast to the first Mishnah. As opposed to the first Mishnah of our Perek here, the 8th Perek of the Masechta, we talked about Ad Hazman. Ad Hazman means up until the time, but that's only if we're talking about something calendaric. But if we're talking about something which is Mamshech, like a harvest, so when you say Ad, you don't mean up until that point in time, but rather you mean basically when that period starts. Good. So and we went over various types of harvests. We went over a wheat harvest, a grape harvest, an olive harvest, and we finally finished off with the fig harvest. That was the highlight of the Mishnah and ended with a fig harvest. And then as we opened up today's daf, as we went past the Mishnah, on the bottom of Samach Alef Amud Beis, to the top of Samach Beis Amud Aleph, today's daf, so what do we learn? That at the end of the fig harvest, notably when all the knives were folded and put back into their bags. So at that point in time, whatever figs are left out in the field is, in fact, hefker. Anyone can take it. It's not chayv and shumas and maisos. So that's what we learned at the beginning of today's daf. And now, anybody can go onto the properties and take from those figs. So numerous stories that we learned that we saw over the course of today's daf, but the story that really preoccupied our, the most of our time is the story regarding Rabbi Tarfon. So Rabbi Tarfon, in fact, was one of those consumers, right? Basically, after the harvest was over, went out to the field, took from it, and the owner was enraged. Somebody was stealing the whole year round, and right happened to have been that he was stealing grapes all year round. But anyway, so there was a person stealing all year round. And once he saw Rabbi Tarfon out in the field, he thought, oh, that's the thief. Even though Rabbi Tarfon was perfectly within his right, because it was the end of the fig harvest and was in his right, but the owner lost his mind. The owner took Rabbi Tarfon, so bagged him, took him and ready to throw him in the river. And Rabbi Tarfon, while in the bag, identified himself as Rabbi Tarfon and was saved. And what was he concerned about? That he misused, he exploited Kesser Shel Torah. Right, and as a result of that, so he felt terrible. Good, and so big topic of today's daf is the exploitation, the usage of Kesser Shel Torah. So you're not allowed to misuse it, you're not allowed to exploit it. But then at the end of today's daf, Rava came up with a number of iterim. You go to a place where they don't know you. You can introduce yourself as a Talmid Chacham. You get parsonage, so you can introduce yourself as a Talmid Chacham if in fact you're entitled to certain tax exemptions. So that you're allowed to do as well. And then the end of today's daf, Avda de Nahara, Avda de Nura. In other words, if also identifying yourself as an Avda de Nura exempts you from tax, you could do that. Isn't that Hana from Avodah Zarah? So the answer, which again, I know it's an incomplete answer, but the answer is that's Mavriach Hari. That's not direct benefit, that's indirect benefit. Okay.